Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
I want to tell you about the first time I was 21 years old and I saw $6 million of cash right in front of me. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's what $6 million looks like? Insane. How the hell can I get this kind of money one day? And the guy who had the $6 million was a Jewish businessman who owned dealerships in San Fernando Valley area. And he gave me an advice at 21 that completely changed the way I do business till today. By the way, if you get value from today's message, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Here's what this Jewish businessman told me. I said, how is it possible you got this much money and you're in your mid-30s, $6 million cash? He says, Patrick, there's one thing you need to know about Jews. I said, what's that? When one makes money, five make money. I said, what? He says, when one of us makes money in a business, five other Jews make money because we like to make money in groups. I said, so what's the benefit of that? He said, everybody keeps doing business together. He says, too many people, ethnicities, nationalities, cultures, backgrounds, they just want to be the one making money. They don't want anybody else around them making money. And then eventually they wonder, how come nobody wants to go into business with me? Because when you make money, nobody else makes money. So ask yourself the question. Number one, the person you're working for, does he make money and do you make money? And number two, the people that work with you, who report to you, if they give their best, do they also make good money the way you're making money? If the answer is yes, you're in a great place. Go do your part, and eventually you'll make your money like that Jewish mentor shared with this 21-year-old 24 years ago, 23 years ago. If you got value from this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. And if you've never watched the video, 20 Rules of Money, How Actually Money Works, click here to watch the video, 20 Rules of Money. Take care, everybody.
All right. Today we have a guest, Awesome Alice. And before we have her on, our primary topic that we want to set the stage with, so when we talk to her, is based on Bill Walton. Bill Walton, the retired National Basketball Association player, played with UCLA, played with the Los Angeles, played for the Portland Trail Blazers and the Boston Celtics. And he's a commentator these days. But Bill Walton lives in the San Diego metro area, which has a homeless problem, like many cities of that size do. Bill says, and I'm just paraphrasing, you know what, we need to round these people up and put them in a place where, that, well, you know what, I'm going to let him speak for himself. I've got some audio of him. So, but before we get to Bill Walton, and once again, we're going to talk about the Bill Walton homeless solution. We're going to take a look at inflation, because inflation does have an effect on who becomes homeless.
How was the junior chipmunk meeting, dear?
It was good. Barbara Jo Allen ate a fly.
Well, with beef at 68 cents a pound, I can't blame her.
A show that takes place in the 50s, already in the 80s when it aired, drawing attention to high inflationary prices. Could you even imagine thinking 68 cents a pound was a lot? The average price in the United States per pound for beef is now about $5.30.
If the cost of everything keeps going up, it'll wreck the economy and make life a living hell for American families.
Inflation in the U.S. hit a record high in June 2022.
consumer prices soared by 9.1% compared to a year prior, the largest annual increase since 1981. While wages are rising, they're not keeping up with inflation. Wage growth has been consistent with an about 4.5% inflation rate. Meanwhile, as of November 2022, inflation was at 7.1%, and Americans are feeling the brunt. Two-thirds of workers say their pay isn't keeping up with these higher prices.
Part of the misconception is people believe, oh, if I'm only getting a 4% salary increase and inflation is 7.7, I'm getting a pay decrease. That's not true.
So what exactly is happening and why? Why aren't salaries keeping up with inflation? Inflation measures how much more expensive a set of goods and services has become over a certain period of time, usually a year. There are a number of reasons why inflation fluctuates, but at the heart of it, it's basic economic principles, supply and demand. More money in people's hands means increased purchasing power. With more demand for goods and services and supply remaining the same, prices will go up. The COVID-19 pandemic is an extreme example, but a good illustration of my point here. At the onset, the world shut down. Consumers weren't spending and instead saving. The government flooded the market with cash. A national eviction moratorium, loan payment pause, and other initiatives put more money in Americans' hands. As restrictions started easing, people began spending again. But at that point, companies weren't producing as much due to supply chain disruptions caused by closed borders, labor shortages, and shipping delays. Money supply growing at a faster rate than the economy's ability to produce goods and services causes inflation. This time, record-breaking inflation.
A key inflation gauge is sounding alarm bells, and it could have a big impact in grocery stores especially. The latest UN Global Price Index shows food costs reached their highest level in nearly a decade last month, thanks in part to supply and logistics issues.
As the pandemic was winding down, in February 2022, Russia's invasion of Ukraine only exacerbated the pressure, raising commodity prices and increasing supply chain issues. Just like inflation, wages are driven by changes in supply and demand, but for labor, they're determined by market and demographic factors. So when job availability, as well as the number of people who qualify and are looking for a specific job change, so do wages. Lori Whisper is a managing director at Willis Towers Watson. For more than 35 years, she's helped companies set their compensation strategies.
Pretty much everybody's compensation philosophy is grounded in the desire to attract and retain employees by paying competitively. Organizations look at what is the cost of labor, what do I have to pay in a given market for a given skill set or job, and that's how I'm going to set my pay rates. They don't look at the cost of living.
Organizations typically determine salary budgets a few years out, so making sudden and significant adjustments in wages is unlikely. Companies like to wait and see if market conditions will be long-lasting before making those changes. How would you feel if your boss gave you a raise and then shortly after cut your salary?
Most organizations do take a relative conservative approach to looking at base salary increases. Even a 1 or 1.5% increase can represent hundreds of millions of dollars for an organization. They need to be good governors of those payroll dollars. That's part of how they run their business, a very important part.
Organizations down the road do not want to be in a position of feeling or believing or factually overpaying their people.
And they don't want to find themselves in a position where they have to reduce wages or, even worse, cut jobs.
Layoffs. Just today, Twitter, half the staff. You see Lyft, Apple, Amazon. It goes on.
U.S.-based employers cut nearly 34,000 jobs in October 2022. Technology companies took the lead with about 9,600 cuts for a total of more than 28,000 cuts so far this year, up 162% from the same period last year.
The high-tech industry, e-commerce, has been one of the highest-paying industries in the U.S. Their salary budgets last year were higher than anybody else's, meaning they were giving greater salary increases than most other industries. So that's a good real-life example of what happens when you overspend relative to what others are providing in your competitive labor markets.
We simply haven't seen anything like this since the 1970s.
Record inflation has only made things worse. Still, organizations typically don't consider inflation and the cost of living when determining wages. While economists say salaries can keep up with inflation, Whisper says they shouldn't.
I know that's going to be controversial for me to say. As employees, as people, we get to make choices on what we buy and how we use our buying power. Companies don't tell us where to live and what to buy. As a company, if I looked at the cost of living and said, okay, I'm just going to take the national average of inflation and match my annual salary increase budgets to that, I'd be overpaying what the market pays for almost every job. That overpayment might cause me to do some things in the future that would hurt everybody.
Like what we're seeing in the tech industry.
When the salary increase budgets drop as a result of economic downturn, they kind of stick. They're not very elastic. Inflation goes up and down quite a lot. Salary increase budgets don't, because they're driven by different things.
What most organizations do is they compensate workers in other ways that won't automatically drive all future earnings up regardless of economic conditions. For example, when many organizations perform well, they reward their employees with bonuses.
Profits go up and down. Financial performance goes up and down. So variable pay programs are best suited to reward for those. When we have low inflation and high salary budgets, employees benefit. But at no time in the past, when our buying power was greater than the cost of things we bought, did we say, oh, let's lower it because we want to match that.
Employers also have hidden increases in compensation, the increase in cost of benefits, and attracting new talent. And some organizations are seeing their costs go up in different ways.
Travel nurse jobs pay substantially more than what they were getting paid to work in a hospital. But in a lot of hospitals around the country, they're seeing their nurses quit, sign up as travel nurses, and the hospital's so short-staffed, they're hiring the travel nurses, so it's the exact same nurse coming back at a higher wage.
However, that increase in salary is offset with no benefits or job security. Overall, middle-income Americans are feeling the largest impact from inflation. Higher-earning workers were more likely to say their incomes held up with the increase in prices. 53% of those earning $100,000 or more per year compared to 34% of those earning less than $50,000.
The biggest increase in labor force participation among people with higher education and among people with less education, like just a high school degree, and it's the people in the middle who have maybe a two-year degree where we've seen the slowest recovery in going back to work.
Typically, lower-income families struggle the most during high inflationary times. However, in the past year, on average, low-wage workers experienced real wage growth after adjusting for inflation, while middle and high-wage workers didn't.
On average, wages have kept up with inflation at the bottom end, but that doesn't mean that there aren't lots and lots of people where their wages haven't kept up. Maybe their market conditions are such that there hasn't been forces pushing the wages up. Maybe they're in a job that they just haven't been able to change because of their circumstances or their child care.
So what would happen if salaries did keep up?
We want wages to go up. We just want them to go up at a level that's sustainable and consistent with 2% inflation.
In November 2022, Federal Reserve Chair Powell said the Fed doesn't want to see a wage price spiral. Rising wages increasing the demand for goods, causing prices to rise, increasing the demand for higher wages, which then leads to higher production costs and more pressure to increase prices, creating a cycle.
Now, once you see it, you're in trouble.
We get this wage price spiral where workers want a 5% raise because they anticipate next year there'll be 5% inflation, but their action makes it a self-fulfilling prophecy. We get 5% inflation, so they do the same thing the next year, and we get sort of stuck at that high inflation rate.
The most effective way to keep wages trailing inflation is by changing jobs. Those who switched jobs between April 2021 and March 2022 saw earnings jump by nearly 10% from a year earlier. Those who stayed saw wages fall nearly 2%. Another way employees can see a boost in their earnings is through cost of living allowances, although those may disappear if inflation goes down again.
There are also opportunities to negotiate for other perks like free meals or snacks, childcare or housing assistance, more paid time off, student loan assistance, a transportation reimbursement, transfer to a location where the cost of living is lower, or an extended timeline for remote work.
Every organization has a different philosophy when it comes to compensation. They create strategic plans, taking into consideration the industry, competition, company culture, financial health, and goals for the future. For some, that means trying to make sure wages keep up with inflation. But for the most part, that's just not how it works. And if that's a problem, it's up to you, the employee, to decide your next move.
Other than, you know, treating people poorly and taking advantage of them, there is no right philosophy. The whole key with your compensation philosophy is, what are you doing so that you feel you're doing the right thing for your organization and for your people?
It's always a good idea when there's lots of opportunities out there to take a look and see if you might just find something a little bit better for you.
And as for keeping inflation down, the government and the Federal Reserve are working on it. Fed Chairman Powell says the country's battling inflation head on. The central bank has raised interest rates and will continue to do so until inflation is under control. Meanwhile, in August 2022, President Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 into law. The spending package is expected to reduce the deficit by more than $300 billion in the next decade. It's not a fix that will happen overnight, but there's hope.
Had a technical difficulty there. All right. So in today's jump-off topic, and we'll get to Alice, awesome Alice here soon, Bill Walton homeless solution. Inflation, show me a homeless person, I'm going to show you inflation helped make that person homeless, so to speak. Now, let's go to, before we get out, awesome Alice. Where do we get? Okay. Let's hear from Bill Walton himself. Give me a moment here. Okay, Walton, Bill. All right, wait a minute. Okay, yep, we're going to have it here in a moment. Let's see. Okay, wait a minute. Trying to get the audio for Bill Walton once again today. The Bill Walton homeless solution. And, okay, wait a minute. Okay, here we go. Bill Walton.
This trail. People live along this trail. People die along this trail. People overdose along this trail. People set fires along this trail. People leave endless amounts of trash on this trail. And this trail connects this neighborhood with the rest of Balboa Park. This is my vision. Children playing outdoors. This is the San Diego Zoo. Fantastic neighbors. Now, these are all Girl Scout encampments here, which are constantly being broken into. This is an off-ramp now. It used to be an off-ramp and an on-ramp. They decided that it was not safe enough. There was not enough room. So this perky, this cul-de-sac now has become a dumping ground. This is Todd Gloria's vision. My vision is secure, safe, healthy, and clean. Trash on the hillside. And then at varying times, I've been attacked, assaulted. I've been chased, threatened, attacked, and assaulted here. This is a transition area. Every place I go, either has to be in a car or on my bike. So I ride my bike over all of these streets, over the entire city I ride my bike. And that is one of the places where I'm regularly chased, threatened, attacked, and assaulted, where they come after you, where they point as if they have a gun and are going to shoot you. This part, that's my vision, free public open green space that's clear and available for anyone and everyone to use. Now, this over here is Gloriaville. We're going to come around there, but I want to come and down and just show you how we, who are trying to live a healthy, productive life, we are dealing with some of the worst streets in all of San Diego. We need parks. Parks are a critical element of a functioning society. Our park has been given away by Todd Gloria, who is not a leader, who is wrong on the facts, who does not have the support of the people, and is on the wrong side of history. This is suburban Gloriaville. This is the east end of the Prado. This is the center, the heart of Balboa Park. Every day, this homeless encampment gets bigger and broader. This is my vision of Balboa Park. This is Todd Gloria's vision of Balboa Park. Every morning I come across this bridge, there is homeless people just splayed out, unconscious, OD'd, living, sleeping on the bridge, and this is the only way through. And I see other people who come and then turn around and go back because they're afraid, because they can't get through. We don't get equal protection. There is selective enforcement. And what are we left with? And why don't we have safe, secure, healthy, and clean environments to live, work, and play?
All right. Well, that's Bill Walton, a concerned citizen out there in San Diego. And the person we're speaking about was the mayor, or is the mayor of San Diego. And you got a similar homeless problem. We're actually globally. You know, inflation, wages. If all you're working with is a wage job, wage paying job, a paycheck job, if that's all you got, that one paycheck that you get once every 2 weeks. Some people get it once a month. Some people get it every week. A check every week, but typically does not, for the average person, keep pace with inflation. And although your paycheck stays static, even if you get a raise, that raise might not be enough to account for inflation. You know, where the price of whatever you're looking for or need to consume, buy, whatever you want to call it, I mean, it just doesn't keep pace. In some cases, since this pandemic, you know, prices, depending on the item, have gone up. I mean, they've doubled or even tripled. But your paycheck is still, you know, at the paycheck. Now, one strategy would be, and I've mentioned this on this before, whatever your yearly salary is, you need to seriously think about earning that on a monthly basis. Monthly basis. All right. We're going to go to Austin Malice here in a moment, but once again, our jump-off topic is the Bill Walton Homeless Solution. We're going to play a little bit more of Bill Walton before we go to the phone lines.
Paradise Lost. This is the story of San Diego, a once great city. I'm Bill Walton, and I'm a San Diego native. I'm a lifelong resident. I'm an engaged citizen. I'm a voter, and I'm a taxpayer. San Diego, this once great city, is in crisis. We have simultaneous homeless crisis, humanitarian crises, public health crises. These are all the result of a leadership crisis. Success in anything, in a group dynamic, a team setting, a city, a community, whatever, success is always a result of effective leadership. Conversely, failure is a result of lack of leadership. And when there's failure, it's the fault and responsibility of the leader. Being part of a team, a community, a group, a city, that's a privilege. It carries with it duty, obligation, and responsibility. Some of the first lessons of responsibility are clean up after yourself. Or how about protecting the rights of others regarding shared public space? This story of our once great city started for me 69 years ago. I was born in San Diego. I grew up in Balboa Park. When I was 26 years old, 43 years ago, we found our family dream home in Hillcrest on the north end of Balboa Park. It was the people, it was the facilities, it was the possibilities and opportunities that were just endlessly positive and so full of hope. It was my dream. It's an iconic neighborhood, electric, eclectic, and very densely populated, as densely populated a community and neighborhood as there is in all of San Diego. And there's always Balboa Park. And our immediate neighbors, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, Roosevelt Middle School, the Veterans Memorial Building, with its disabled service centers for our veterans, the Center for the Blind, and our world-famous San Diego Zoo. Right in the middle of all of this is the park on the east side of Park Boulevard between Morley Field Drive and Zoo Place. It's an expansive, flat, level, free, public open green space with spectacular views and the all-encompassing wonders of nature and life, and places where families could go, where children could play, roll in the grass and in the dirt. Didn't have a name like all the other sections of Balboa Park. It wasn't named Bird Park. It wasn't named Marston or Inspiration Point. It wasn't named Sixth and Laurel. It wasn't named Lawn Bowling Park. It wasn't named the Pepper Grove or the Redwood Grove. It was always just the park. And it was all better than perfect. It was Shamrocks. It had everything anyone could ever ask for. It was my dream. But then the problem. A few years back, our mayor, Todd Gloria, decided that the park would be a terrific place for a massive homeless encampment with its accompanying nightmares of enormous amounts of trash, safety issues, lack of sanitation, health problems, and security issues, and all the other tragedies that are now part of life in our beloved but crumbling neighborhood. This is absurd and insane. This is a shipwreck. The rest is the sad story of our once great but now failing neighborhood and community and our beloved park, which for years was just called The Park. It now has a new name, Todd Gloriaville. I'm a patriot. I love our neighborhood and I love our city, and I'm fighting to save it. I have been after our city officials for years to provide us with a safe, secure, healthy, and clean place for us to live, work, and play, to clean up our park, to pave the two streets that are the only way through to the south from our neighborhood, Park Boulevard and Zoo Drive, to clear the sidewalks and the bike paths of the homeless encampments so that we can freely move about our once great city. A moment on the bike paths. There are bike paths throughout our city. There are three critical ones for the transportation of people who are riding their bikes. In no particular order, there's the Ocean Beach bike path, there's the Embarcadero bike and pedestrian path right along the water between Hawthorne Street and the airport, and then there's the Vermont Street Bridge, which connects Hillcrest with the neighbors to the north and to the east. On any given day, it can be any one of our bike paths, which are specifically designated for bikes. There are no other parks in our city with the massive homeless encampment that we have in Gloriaville. There are no other parts of Balboa Park with the massive homeless encampments that we have in Gloriaville. I have spoken with our terrific San Diego PD. They say they operate at the direction and command of Todd Gloria. The same with our city council. Talk to Todd Gloria. The same with the ADA, compliance department. I'm disabled. They say too, talk to Todd Gloria. The same with the California Coastal Commission. Talk to Todd Gloria. I begged, I pleaded with Todd Gloria. We want our neighborhood back. We want our community, our park, our bike paths back. It was less than useless. It was a massive and stupefying exercise in futility. Todd Gloria governs by the changing winds of social media. Todd Gloria, in our conversations, prefaces every explanation with, "This is not an excuse." Then he goes on to make yet another excuse. Todd Gloria likes to excuse his failures by saying his San Diego Police Department is understaffed. What Todd does not point out is that since he took office, his oath to serve and protect and to provide us with a safe, secure, healthy, and clean environment to live, work, and play, that there are about 300 fewer officers on our San Diego Police Department today than when Todd Gloria took office, and that many of those officers have left because they can't or won't work for Todd Gloria. Why can't we fill these official and critical San Diego Police Department positions? People who want this honorable profession and career, they don't want to work for Todd Gloria. Now, Todd Gloria and his self-proclaimed Todd Squad, they love to run around our once great city, telling everyone what a great job he's doing. This is nonsensibly absurd. Are we to believe his hot air or our own eyes? Things are worse now than ever before, and our lives are being dictated by an out-of-control and unruly homeless population. Every time I go out on my bike, I'm threatened, chased, attacked, and assaulted by homeless people. Our mail and deliveries are stolen from our front door. We are not able to move freely through our neighborhood or Balboa Park. This is not what we bought into in our special compact with Todd Gloria. I have asked Todd Gloria what I can do to help. I got no response. I have asked Todd Gloria what he was going to do to rectify this horrific human tragedy and travesty. I got no response. I have asked Todd Gloria if he recommends to me, as a 69-year-old disabled bike rider, should I carry tear gas, pepper spray, maybe a taser for my own protection? I got no response. I have asked Todd Gloria for a tax rebate, a tax credit, and a reduction on my future taxes because of his failures to deliver the security and safety, that healthy and clean environments that we have every right to expect. I got no response. Todd Gloria, he has no problem whatsoever cleaning up and then selling or leasing or renting our public lands for his own benefit. But try asking Todd Gloria to provide us, the people who live here and need our parks, streets, sidewalks, and bike paths for our everyday life and just want to go to the park, to ride our bikes to the beach, to walk in our neighborhoods, to feel safe and secure in our own homes and lives. He's got no time, heart, or stomach for that. Because to Todd Gloria, we don't count. We don't matter. And he doesn't care. And what do we get? We get Gloriaville. Now, the solution. We need new leadership. Todd Gloria should step aside. Todd Gloria campaigned for his job on the promise that he would fix the homeless, humanitarian, and public health crisis in our once great city. Todd Gloria has made it worse. He is not up to the job. He does not know how to do the job. He does not want to do the job. Todd Gloria has been wrong on these crises his entire career. These crises need a leader. A leader who will insist on constant engagement with the homeless population, insist on consistent rehabilitation, and be responsible for the constant enforcement of the rules of a functioning society. We want the homeless population off the streets, out of the parks, off the sidewalks and bike paths. Give them a life of dignity. Give them the chance to build their lives and their dreams. These crises are not just going to go away by themselves. These are matters of equal protection, equal enforcement, common sense, and human decency. And all of these matters require leadership and enforcement. We have the resources. We have the facilities. We have huge numbers of people who want to help to be shamrocks. We have the historical precedent. Years ago, South Mission Beach, Golden Hill, disasters like we have today. But with leadership and enforced regulations, those neighborhoods have been reclaimed, they've been restored and maintained. With regular and consistent enforcement, it can be done and it has to be done again. Now, I started this quietly. I thought that Todd Gloria would see the light and that he would do the right thing. I was mistaken and proven wrong. Somehow, some way, other people found out about my behind-the-scenes efforts to save our once great city. My efforts have now intensified and are now in the public domain. We are building coalitions of concerned citizens and all the stakeholders who share a love for our once great city. And while my efforts are now public, others have continued the quiet back-channel discussions and diplomacy to solve these crises that are failures of the human spirit. I have been told by these intermediaries that Todd Gloria has stated that he is not going to do anything about Gloriaville, about our bike paths, about our sidewalks, or about any of this. This is absurd. This is insane. This is a shipwreck. I'm a patriot, and I love my once great city. Sadly, and with a broken heart, I can no longer claim that San Diego is the greatest place on earth. I can no longer urge family, friends, tourists, and businesses to come and spend your lives here. I can no longer recommend that people should move to our once great neighborhood and join our once great community. I can no longer say that this is my dream. And I'm brokenhearted. Our friend and leader, fallen and passed now, Father Joe, 2.5 years ago, in his scooter, leaving his office, his center, downtown, the sidewalks, the streets, overrun, dominated by homeless encampments of incalculable size and measure. Father Joe himself could not get through on his scooter. Like me, Father Joe, disabled. Father Joe tried to go around. He couldn't. He had to go over and off the curb. While doing that, the disabled Father Joe, he tumbled and he fell and he ended up in the gutter. And he stayed in that gutter, filled with trash, with urine, with feces, with human waste of indescribable proportions. And he laid there for 30 minutes in the gutter by himself before somebody came by to help him. This is absurd. This is insane. I want our parks back. I want our streets paved and made usable. I want our sidewalks and bike paths to be used as intended. And I want our lives back. It's fitting and appropriate that we're gathering here today on the campus of USD at the Institute for Peace and Justice. I am well aware that without justice, there can be no peace. And when historians look back at the failed and brief tenure of Todd Gloria as our once great city crumbles, dissolves, devolves, these historians, they'll rightly conclude that Todd Gloria, he had a chance. He had a chance to make things right. He had a chance to do something. He had the platform. He had the power. He knew everything. Yet, he, Todd Gloria, he chose. Todd Gloria chose to do nothing.
All right, that was Bill Walton speaking at, I guess, a town hall meeting in his neck of the woods, Southern California, San Diego. And today's podcast, to jump off, the topic is the Bill Walton Homeless Solution. Now, let me put something out here from an It's My House point of view before we go to Alice, Awesome Alice. The mayor of San Diego, the mayor of Los Angeles, as a matter of fact, the mayor of any town, globally cannot control inflation. And there's a connection between inflation and foreclosures. There's a direct relationship between inflation and evictions. There's a direct relationship between inflation and homelessness. That's why the first audio I played today was one explaining about what inflation is. The mayor of a town, matter of fact, there are two figures that, if you're not familiar with them, both of them, I know some of you are, most of you are, but I'm going to put it out there anyway, particularly for if you have any teenagers anywhere in the audience. You have the mayor, everybody's heard of a mayor, and you also have, in some cities, not in all cities, a city manager. And towns where you have a city manager and a mayor, the mayor is more like a ceremonial position. And it's the city manager who actually runs that city. Economically speaking, fiscally speaking, all right? Now, there's no mayor Matter of fact, Jesus can come back and be elected mayor. Just pick whatever town you want Jesus to be mayor of. Jesus has no control over inflation. What's a penny today will be 2 cents tomorrow. That's just the nature of the beast. As in the audio with inflation, supply and demand. A year ago, there were not 8 billion people on the planet. Today, in this month of January 2023, there are over 8 billion people on the planet now and counting. Supply and demand. If you don't have enough of a supply, or you, let's say you do, then just inflation, well, you gotta increase the price. Now, let's get back to mayor. It doesn't matter what city, country, or whatever. The mayor and the city council. The mayor and the city manager. All right. The mayor is like, if there's no city manager, the mayor's like CEO. If there's a mayor and a city manager, well, the mayor's like CEO and the city manager is CFO, chief financial officer. If there's no city manager, then the mayor is a de facto CEO / CFO. All right. They got to meet a payroll every 2 weeks of all city employees. And those city employees, they go to Walmart and Target and Best Buy. They order off of Amazon just like you do. You got a fair share that they go to the dollar store, Dollar General, Dollar Tree, McDonald's, Burger King, Subway. Some people like to eat at restaurants high-end. Some people like to go low-end at McDonald's. But everything that you spend money on, so do the city employees. They need raises because inflation. And inflation is like, it's very subtle. Most people don't know it, notice it, until they can't pay something. They don't realize, wait a minute, how am I going to pay this? The utility companies, which are in a lot of your larger cities, or monopolies. The utility companies basically, you know, if they're supplying electricity or natural gas, they have the legislators around that particular city, city council and the mayor's office, they got them on lock. And they want a rate increase, a utility hike, which increases what you're going to pay for electricity or natural gas or whatever you might have. And then, of course, the water company, a lot of times in a lot of your larger cities or even smaller towns, is simply owned by a local municipality. But they all have a payroll to meet. And these people need to be paid. They have pension funds. They need to be paid. And inflation affects all that and is always on the rise. But what they have to pay out in paychecks and expenses doesn't keep pace with inflation. Although they might tell you, you got a cost of a living increase based on inflation. Typically, as soon as you get that cost of living increase, that's outdated because inflation has surpassed that. That can lead to evictions, foreclosures, homelessness, what have you. So you've got, unless you have some type of side hustle of business that you can outpace inflation. And really having your own business is probably the best way to do that, including side hustles. You've got to have something that surpasses that. That's why I say whatever you're earning in a year, you need to seriously start figuring out ways on how you can earn that on a monthly basis. Take a person, there are people out here that earn, they have households of $100,000 a year. And they're struggling, $100,000 a year. Now, if they live in a place like Chicago, New York City, Boston, Washington, D.C., Miami, San Diego, San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, you know, $10,000 a month, that might keep the lights on based on your lifestyle. However, if they were making $100,000 per month, or let's just take it down to even $20,000 per year, you know, that check on your own there. What is the, let's see, I'll do it right here. Wait a minute. And we're going to go to the phone lines with Alice here soon. Poverty line. What's the poverty line here in the United States? Okay, poverty line. All right. I'm here in Florida. The poverty line for an individual is $13,590 per year. For a family of two in the state of Florida for 2022, the poverty line for a household of two is $18,310. For a family of four in the state of state of Florida, the poverty line is $27,750 per year. Now, that's got to be split up among four people. That's the poverty line for Florida. Now, let's go with, if we can get a USA figure here, get a national numbers here. All right, in the United States, the poverty line, now this is in a contiguous 48 states. We're not talking about Alaska. For a single person, you need nationwide, on average, you need to be taking in $12,880 a month. That's a little bit over $1,000 a month, about $250 a week. That's for just one person. If you're a household of two, you need to be taking in $17,420. If you're a family of four, you need to be taking in $26,500 per year. And then just out of curiosity, Alaska. What's the poverty line for Alaska? Poverty line in Alaska for an individual is $16,090. For a family of four in Alaska, because things are expensive, Alaska is expensive, it's $33,130. Now, here's what I'm saying. And none of those salaries that I just named keep up with inflation. In order to outpace inflation, it's my house opinion. If the poverty line for one person is $16,090 for a year, you need to be thinking about what you need to do to earn $16,090 per month. If you're in a family of four, the poverty line in the in Alaska is $33,130 a year for a family of four in Alaska, where a lot of stuff has to be flown into that state because it's not part of the lower 48. You know, shipping is expensive. Then you need to figure out a way where you and your family, y'all need to start a family, all four of y'all, even if the kids are little, y'all need to figure out a way where you can earn $33,130 per month. That way you'll be ahead of inflation and you can breathe, you can save money, I mean substantial amount of money, because you know, if you're taking in $33,000 a month, you know, you're not going to spend all of that. You'll have a surplus, and a nice chunky surplus too. So Bill Walton didn't mention that, and I'm not saying my particular, you know, now Alice, and we're going to go to Awesome Alice here in a few seconds. Alice said something yesterday. Now, my solution, and I'm sure there are a lot of solutions, but it's not a silver bullet, is teach people how to build their own house. Debt-free house, mind you. No government programs. But do like the Amish do. And as one of the audios that I play now is a morning standard, part of the Jewish paradigm, which could be anybody's paradigm, is get yourself together with some friends. And you all help each other build your own homes. You got five friends, you got nine friends, because what Alice said yesterday hit home with me. Build them. I don't want to butcher it up. I just want to get on the line here real quick. If they help build it, they will stay. Bill Walton's well-meaning. And what he said, it's a possible strategy. But now, there have been discussions with politicians. This is, 2023? Let's go back to the March on Washington. The March on Washington was, I believe, in 1963. It's 2023 right now. 60 years ago, Martin Luther King, we just celebrated his birthday yesterday, went to Washington, D.C. on the Washington Mall and gave us his I Dream of Jesus. There was a homeless problem then, globally, 60 years ago. So not a mayor, a politician, a Congress, a Senate, a city council has solved it yet. Now, 2 months ago, I had three young ladies on from the Freedom Georgia Initiative. They have a solution that works. Instead of waiting on the government, they got together 19 families. They bought 97 acres. Now they're up to 502 acres. It's easier to get together with some people and build together debt-free homes. They're starting their own town called Freedom, Georgia. And you can look them up on YouTube, the Freedom Georgia Initiative. That's their solution. I can't think of anything better. That, start your own town, or buy a town that's already existing, like a ghost town. There are over 3,800 ghost towns in the United States. You can buy one of those. That's another solution. But in 60 years, there has not been one politician, not one president of the United States, that has come up with a workable solution. Not one. And personally, I don't think you're going to see it in the next 4 years. Anyway, all right, let me get off of my soapbox. All right, I done played these audios. All right, let's see. Awesome Alice, I'm coming to you here. And Chris, I'm coming to you here. Or anybody else, 619-768-2945. To paraphrase Bill Walton, round them up, and educate them on where they can live a sustainable lifestyle. They're not, let me throw this out there. See, Bill didn't throw this out there either. There are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. Now, there are more communities than that, but those are ones who have a municipal charter. 19,500 of them. Now, my strategy for San Diego, Los Angeles, India, within 30 minutes to an hour's drive, 30 miles to a 60-mile radius of San Diego, find you a rural area and buy land, raw land. Start your own community. Educate people on how to do that. But see, that's not going to be to the benefit of San Diego or Los Angeles or Boston and Chicago. They're not going to do that. Thank God for YouTube, though, and the social media platform we have. Teach people. I mean, look, the Amish do it. You don't see the Amish on no government programs. The Amish and the Mennonites. You don't see them on no government programs. You don't see them in the social services office. They build homes with no mortgages on them. They don't get involved with FHA, VA, and all these other government programs. They don't do any of that. Their primary financing tool is social capital. It's their community. The biggest financial tool that the homeless have that are sleeping out there in these tents is each other. The missing link is they haven't been educated on geography, on where to get the land. Now, remember the chess analogy I put out there. The chessboard, if it represents the United States, the landscape of the United States, the chessboard has 67 squares. In the United States, 80% of the population lives on just 3% of the landmass. So in reference to a chessboard, that's only two squares. We got 86% of the population lives in those two squares. That's where you got the homelessness problem. That's where you have the police problem. That's where you have the redlining problem. All those people crammed in to two boxes, two squares on a chessboard. That's where the issues are. Step outside of that, you've got freedom. All right, now I'm off my soapbox for real now. Okay. So, all right, let me go to the phone lines here, 619-768-2945. We go to Awesome Alice. Good morning, Awesome Alice.
Good morning, good morning. How are you doing today?
Fine. I was on my soapbox for a while. But you said something yesterday that I think would fit a lot of people who have a housing issue. You repeat it because you said it accurately. If they build it, so, they will stay.
Yeah, if they build it with you, they will stay.
Okay.
Because then that's what the Holy Spirit is trying to tell us, that whatever we do with our youth, it's got to be for them, right? So if you're doing it with them, then they will know that it's for them because they are able to do it with you. But when we build things and we say it's for them, they don't have access to it 24/7 or whenever they felt like they needed it. It's not there to make them feel like that, because you got to take care of the heart. The heart is where the home is at. So when we build, we're building with their heart, their needs already met. So you have to know what their needs are to be able to know how to meet them. But instead of just trying to meet them for them, help them, help, let them allow them to help you build it, and we will know what they need because they're building their needs with us. So we can't do it without them, and they sure can't do it without us. So they need us, and we need them. So this youth center is different. We haven't built it yet. It's been in existence since 2009 and registered, but it just became a 501c3 in 2022. And we can't put the first brick down until the youth is in the foundation. And our foundation is based off of 10 words. That's integrity. Our children need to know what integrity is. They need to know how to be one with theyself and whole with theyself, true to theyself, honest with theyself, and then empathy. They need to know what empathy is, but they don't know what it is because nobody is really showing them empathy and compassion, forgiveness, peace, knowledge, wisdom, grace, charity, and healing, because they need to be healed. Their minds need to be healed. Their hearts need to be healed. And in order for them to do that, we have classes that we're literally teaching them how to walk in integrity, how to tell your truth and walk in their truth without hurting someone else. It's in the music, it's what they listen to. So when you change their environment by changing what they listen to and what they see, then when we build for them, then they're building what they're imagining is in there as well. And so that's why we feel like if you build it with them, they will stay. Instead of building something and putting a boy in a blue room, saying that this is the room that you need to go to, and a girl in a pink room, let their imagination be there because they will enjoy it as long as they can see themselves in what we're building. And that's what we came up with it at.
All right, now you're based where now?
I'm in Florida right now. We based out of Georgia. It was 501c3 certified in Georgia in 2022, and we came to Florida, and now it's 501c3 here in Florida now as well. And that just became in December of 2022.
Okay, now you're down in the Miami area?
So yeah, we in Miami. We in Boca Raton. We in Tallahassee. Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, Boca, that's high end up that way. Now, what are some of the programs that you have planned for you know, the age range of people that you want to help or that you will help?
Yes, yes. So some of our programs is developing a leader within, because everything has to start within. But we have obstacle courses. We have games that they can play. We have boxing rings, football teams, basketball teams. We have people that build tiny homes. So we have a program where they can come and learn how to build tiny homes. We have programs where we build stages where they can perform on. So instead of building secular stages, we would like to start building kingdom stages so that they can see themselves as royalty. So when they're singing, they're rapping, they're talking, they're speaking internally, like they know that they're kings and they know that they're queens and they know that they're lords and they know that they're ladies. We have to show them something different. And so our program comes with so many different avenues. We have people that train them in swimming. We have our own security team that's teaching them how to not just operate guns, but when to use them and how to use them so they're not using them recklessly the way that they are right now. So we have something for everybody, and we just collaborating with different groups and different people, because it's going to take a whole village to raise the new youth that we need to see so that they're not doing the things that they're doing right now. So yeah, we have many programs.
Okay. All right. I like the sound of that. Are there any online meetings or anything like that, or where people can get, or offline events where people can get involved or attend?
Yes, we have clubhouses that we have. We have different clubhouses, integrity clubhouses. We have hope clubhouses. We have we can meet on Zoom calls. We have our developing our all of our classes are online. We graduated with John Maxwell, so we are certified. So everything that we're doing and everything we do with the youth, they will leave our program certified in everything that they're being trained to do. So they're walking certifications, which will make them, which will, when it says experience in education, no tables can be turned from them. And that's how well equipped we want our youth to be. We want them to speak divine intelligently and respectfully with the expression of leadership.
Now, as far as marketing, do you guys have an outreach how do people find you?
Well, we're setting all of that up now. We do have a website. We have two websites that people can actually go to sign up for any of the leadership classes. They can go through there and see what classes they literally want to be a part of. But we also taken the blueprints that we wrote a business plan and we sent it through the courts. And it was to show that there's no deception in nothing that we're doing. There's no harm or danger coming to our children. We decided to go through the courts first so that people can, when they do sign up, they can understand that we took ourselves to court to show that we don't want no deception found in nothing that we're saying. We see that the youth programs, some of our youth they running away or they're being found murdered or they're being found under the steps and all of these other things. We want people to be so secure. Well, what we're doing is we took everything we're doing. We have 15 entities, and we made sure that the court system knows that each one is built to design to help create jobs in our communities, help our youth with their education. We have a school. It's called the House of Divine Minds. And so we just want them to know that they're scientists, they're doctors, they're lawyers, and we want to speak to them right and meet them right where they at so that they're not lost, so that their gifts, skills, and talents are not lost to the street. So, we ready.
Alice.
Yes, sir.
You see, So that's all part of if they help build it, they will stay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
If they help build it, they're not going to leave because they're in it. They know when their blood, sweat, and tears is in it, when their thought is made a priority, when their feelings is made a priority, when their needs is made a priority, they're going to build, and they won't stop building because it's just what they do. And that's what we need. We need to keep them busy and giving them projects that they can fall in love with, giving them projects that they can stand back and say that they did it, that they helped with it, that from the foundation, that they were a part of it. Yes, you have to make them a part of everything.
Amen.
All right, that makes sense. All right, let's see.
And my brother Perry has a scripture to go with it, if you don't mind, real quick. Brother Perry.
Sure, yeah.
Amen,
yeah.
Amen.
Can you hit him with that scripture real quick to verify what we're saying about as long as they do it with us, they will stay?
Oh, yeah, they will stay because it's not just like one scripture. It's a prophecy all through the Bible, and it's foretold in the body temple that Jesus created. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying that Solomon's temple was the greatest temple that was ever created, still broken down several different times, and it's still not standing. So the final temple that should be built is within. And that's what we're teaching from within. If you go in the book of Nehemiah, the whole book of Nehemiah is about the captives returning to build. And the first thing they started building was the walls in order to protect their city, in order to stop it from being invaded, in order to separate their environment. So that's what we're doing. We are the church without walls because we are the ones that's designed to protect our kids. It's also in 1 Kings chapter 6 when he speak of the dimensions of Solomon's temple. There were so many things. There's a court of Gentiles. There's an inner and an outer courts. There's a temple. There's so many significant things that you have to go through before you get to the Holy of Holies and then the Holy of Holies. But if you build it with them, if they help you build it, then they can identify themselves in it. It's something that they can put their energy into, and your energy is your inner G, the God that's within you. So that's what we're teaching you how to do. It's not something that can be taught by people. It's something that falls like God said, it falls, my doctrine will fall like rain. And when it falls like rain, all you have to do is look inside you, because we are the temple. We are God's temple. And we are the generation. This is the time to start building with our youth and let them see themselves in it. Once they see themselves in it, if it's anything that's not according to what they feel, then they have the right to change it. They have the right to build and imagine and use their spiritual and mental faculties in the right environment. And that's what we're creating right now. That's what God has allowed us to create.
All right.
Amen.
Okay, well, speaking of walls, Chris Collins, now you build walls, so chime in on it for us.
Everything they're speaking is, you know, truth. And our children are the now, and they will design the cities of the future. Because the number one building game, or number one game going on right now, is building civilizations. So if they're going to do it on a video game, well, let's embrace that. They love doing it. And let's, when they push enter for what they just designed, an adult goes to work. This will start their generational wealth that their grandchildren will be taken care of before they're ever even dreamed of. So this is the standing point of the human race, right? We are human beings. And our children can teach us to start being human. But we have to do that. We have to take the blinders off and realize that all of us are alike. Not everybody's a leader. You can lead others with your light. And as you turn on their light, it'll get brighter. So the goal is here to take people out of the darkness and into the light and show them that they matter as much as every other person on earth. And we can make it nice by giving them the support and the needs that need to be met individually. And by meeting those needs as an individual, no one is the same. Not two of us. There's not a thought that you're going to have that I'm going to know you're going to have. And you know, that we need to teach our children that those thoughts that they're having, those are their creations. Now, let's embrace them and let them think a little harder, because those brains are amazing. And the earlier we reach them and spark them and get them utilizing that brain and firing it in different areas, this is how we create them to be super beautiful people. Because we need to take the hatred out, and they don't know it till we teach it to them. Because it's us that hate. It's us that envy. It's us that have spite. They don't know any of that. They want love. They want food. They want to be happy. They want to laugh. And they definitely don't want to cry. When they feel sad, they show it. And then we're taught not to show it, because we keep telling them, dry it up. That's not right. That's not how you mold a human being. And the thing is do you like the mold of who you are? That's a question people need to ask themselves. Because if you don't like who you are, how can other people like you? How can you expect other people to like you? And not that they don't like parts of you, but do they like you as a whole? Everything about you, 100%. Do they have your back 365? No. They don't, unless they're getting something out of you. And that's what we've been programmed, is we've got to get something to give something. And that's not the way it should be. It should be the need over the greed. And our children, they need certain things, but they need an opportunity to show you how intelligent their brains really can be. Because everything we teach them, they'll learn. I know that. Because I had an older brother that 2 years older than me, but when he got brought home homework, I wasn't going to sit there and let him do something I wasn't getting to do. But it was the thing and what it made me be able to be. Because in the first grade, I was the youngest person in the Las Vegas school district to know their adding, subtracting, multiplying, and dividing in their head. 1 through 12. I could tell you any one of the numbers in the first grade. And the school took a picture of me and everything, put it up. And it was the point. Our children just need an opportunity. And a lot of them will take it right off the bat on their own. But then we'll be their one saying, you can't do that. Don't do that. Why? Well, you know, as long as they're not breaking the law and doing something wrong, let them explore. Because everybody's adventure is different. This journey we're on is yours, but it's also ours. And your problems can feel weighted on you. But if we all claim them, they're very minute. We can move mountains. We can do everything if we help. So it's a hand up, not a hand out. You know, we've had this wrong scenario. Section 8, if you stay down, we'll pay your bills. If you start to succeed, we're going to take away your benefits, and it's going to cause you to turmoil. Now, Section 3, they never tell you about Section 3. I learned about it. So now it's time to educate the country about Section 3. Been around since the 60s, 50 years of a different Section 8 situation. Because they'll still help you with your bills, but they want you to succeed. They want you to get education. They want you to grow. And they don't talk about that, do they? Because they want the systemic of society to be held in a certain place. And certain ones will get to break free. They're not bringing everybody with them. And we need everyone to see that there's an opportunity out there for everyone. You know, I just shared information with Ben Carson. He was able to turn that stuff into legislation that actually gives everyone that's down right now an opportunity to be up, to be proud, to hold their head up, have dignity in every way, because they can own a home. And, you know, people need to know this stuff. All we can do is share it. We get on here every day and share information just for your benefit. Because if you benefit, we benefit. Because we want everyone to get picked up.
They build it with you. They go and stay. Because they didn't know that they are in it.
That's right.
Without them being included, it builds up in the community that it's here. It ends up being hurt in places that people.
You kind of got some wind blowing there. I can't hear you. You're breaking up just a little bit, Alice. Can't hear you. She might have been getting a bad signal right there for a moment. I think she's coming back. But you
yeah,
know,
it's bad reception in her area.
Is that what it is? I had a feeling it was. You know, I've engaged with the kids. I've built things with them, and I know the excitement they see when they see what they created. I've done it with them. I know for a fact how they react. And the ones that haven't got to do it yet, but they got to like see other ones do it, they're like, "When can I do it?"
Right.
Because they want to do what others are doing. And, you know, there's a lady that's got a program that she's got started in L.A., and it adapts perfect with our initiative to encourage our children, because that's what my charity is about. It's about giving you a gift of ideas. And all you got to do is work with them and watch the growth. And, you know, If you hold a seed in your hand, it'll never grow. If it's in your pocket,
Amen.
It'll never grow. If it's in your mouth, it'll never grow. So let out
Amen.
The knowledge. Let them seeds grab root. Watch the branches grow and then see the fruit. And when they see the fruit, they can eat it. You know, we've got a way to stop the hunger. We got a way to stop the thirst. We have those solutions. It's what we do and how fast we do it on truly what we really want to see happen. And, you know, we've got 15,000 linear feet per hour of building material.
Wow.
If people don't hear that message and hear that they can have this solution, get their people that are the weakest link, because you're only as strong as your weakest link. So you might have a big metropolis city, but it's those broken chain links down there in the bottom, on the bridging the gap that we're not doing, that we need to do by ensuring them that they don't have to go and take from someone else. They can, because that's what we're, you know, most people right here in the United States take every day. It's about me. It's not about we. You know, but that M going upside down into a W can flip the world upside down on what we're thinking. Because, you know, we're grounded in our feet. You jump up, I guarantee you coming down. It's the law, okay? Law of physics. It's just the way it works. Gravity will pull you down. So you are negatively just stuck to this. But the one thing is your head is the furthest thing away from it, and it is the creator. So you're limited. Your two legs, your back, and your arms can only do so much, and you can only make so much from them. You get up and go to work, you can work 18 hours a day. You're still limited on how much money you can make physically with 90% of your body. But if you use 10% of your body, it's unlimited. There's no greater than your brain and you utilizing what it is. Because there's more power in one head than all the computers on Earth.
I agree.
Now, there's 8 billion heads, but the problem is what's programmed in them? What's been downloaded? And what's
That's the
getting
problem.
Uploaded? You know, and the thing is you ain't got to plug in. You just got to plug in. You got to hit them in the heart. My mission on Earth, I didn't figure out what it was, and my purpose is to ignite a fire in people's heart that water won't put out. If I do that, then I did my job. That's my purpose, and I find joy in it. And if you enjoy what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. You will wake up anticipating what is next. So that's my little rant.
Amen, amen. I agree totally. I mean, to me, the computers is self-explanatory. You can't go on the internet without entering a net. You're actually surfing a worldwide web. You know what I mean? It even got the symbol of the apple and the bite out of the side of it. So it's very deep to me about the programming, because it's in everything. It's in the music. It's in the television. They want you to sit calm doing television programming. But it's just somebody's vision that they're telling you. We have our own vision. The word says that in the last days, our young men will dream visions of their own. They don't need someone to give them visions. They have visions inside of them, but they're too caught up in the culture. They're too caught up in the fad and following this person and that person instead of becoming a trendsetter. You know, even DNA says you're one in a million out of a million sperm cells. Only one made it. So even the DNA tells you that you're one in a million, and we're trying to bring that forward out of them. You know, we've been through so many things that our experience has given us experiences. And until we have learned those things in our youth, the youth that now, they can avoid that. The Bible says there's no temptation that comes to man that's foreign from his body. So if we keep them from indulging in certain practices, certain sensations, certain cultivation of their spirit, man, in certain ways.
Definitely. And I've been on my mission now for, this is 18 years, to that started in 2005. But it started by someone telling me that a business, because he put it in his name for credit reasons, that he told me straight up, he says, you know that bank account's in my name, right? And that's because I just asked him for $50,000 out of it so I could get me a house. I've been living on $500 a week, working 70 people. Made $1 million. Put $250,000 in the bank, and this man, over $250,000, he never had to work a day at all to see that money get put in the bank. And over greed, he didn't want to meet my need. And I told him, I said, man, this business is in my head. And that man told me, he says, now he's a college educated man, been well off his whole entire life. And he tells me, he says, that's awful grandiose, don't you think? And I said, no. I happened to learn what the word was. But I was 32 years old when I found my purpose. And I thought it was to make money. And it really truly is, but not to make me money. It's to make everyone in poverty prosper. It's time to change what the human race is about. It's time for us to pick it up, realize that we have to claim the problem and not ignore it. Don't go home and lay on your bed and go to sleep with a clear conscience when you saw something that needed fixed today. If you do, you're just a human being. Okay, that's the difference of being human, because you'll think of yourself above others. But if you're a human being, or if you want to be a human being that's being human, then think of others above yourself. You know, nothing will be put upon your shoulders you can't handle. But why don't you carry a little bit of the load? If it's easy for you to get through each and every day, why don't you help someone else along the way? It's not about what you're going to take from this earth, but what you're going to leave. What is your legacy? Now, the thing is the land was taken before you were ever born. It was taken before I was, for definite. But the thing is we can give it back to our children and not worry that they'll ever know this problem, because they can eliminate it. If you do the math at 15,000 linear feet per hour, how many hours do we have in a year? I imagine LA's probably got the number. He has done so much research. Blow me away that if you wouldn't have it. But when you look at those hours, and how many linear feet that is, and how many linear feet it actually takes to give someone four walls and a bathroom. Now, the need, not necessarily what they want, but that's meeting the need. And if we were able to meet that need and be able to feed, and we can do it without greed, then everyone will succeed. And it's time for you and me to work in unity. That's you and I together is why. Create the community by putting the word truly in it and giving people an equal opportunity by putting the word in it. And the only thing we're doing is making one letter plural to togethers. That's it. You and I together is why. And you're the you in unique. You're the you in understanding. And you're the you in you. And no one's going to be like you. And I want to know what you're going to create, what you're going to do, because this is the clue. See with our eyes. It processes 200,000 times faster than hearing it. But also, you get overwhelmed with things you're hearing. So take notes. A lot of people need to. I take mental notes as I'm hearing things, and I'm picturing what it is you're saying. And by doing that, I'm creating what you're saying in my mind. My mind is powerful. I can think of anything I want to, and there's a picture of it right there. But it's totally, if it happens in your mind, you just get it clouded and want to watch what someone else creates. But is that really going to initiate the change you want to see? Because I want to be the change I want to see. And I lead by example. And I let anyone know, whatever situation you went through, whatever you're going through, you're not alone. If I can help, I will. Hopefully someone else will be able to help along with this. But there's so many people out there, so many organizations that say no. And it's because they have guidelines that they have to work through when they have this money. And it tells them what they can and can't do. Now, some of the things they can spend frivolously and exuberantly amounts of money that don't need to be spent on that. But if they don't spend it on that, they can't spend it on this. So the money just sits there. And if they don't spend it, they lose it. So there's so many problems going on and how the money is being dispersed to your cities, what they have to do with it, and what whether or not they're out there open-minded and actually wanting to put an end to this problem and not try to get the money next year. Because if you can eliminate a problem and make it sustainable, you don't need to get the money next year. You can still do the project because it's taking care of itself. That's the key, and that's what they want to see, because they're tired of just putting this Band-Aid on there. And they would rather eliminate us than to continue with this Band-Aid. So we either mend our links, make our chain out of titanium, and when it stretches out, it ain't going to break. But we ain't going to let it stretch. It's not ever going to be under tension, because we can relieve the world without a mention of how the past has been, but how the future is going to be, how you and me can really see something beautiful and not made out of a tree. All right. I think I've been going on my rant for a minute. If there's anyone that would like to chime in, we can have a conversation. You know, I don't have a problem talking. It's just whether or not the people that hear are truly hearing the message. I can never get anyone to receive a message they're not ready to hear. But never underestimate the power of planting a seed. And that's what I do. I put a seed in whoever hears me, and it's what they do from there. I cannot make them do anything. I can try. That's all I can do. And I can't save everyone. I know that all too much. But I can save someone. And there's not a functional family nowhere on this planet. There's always a dysfunctional family. And you might think, because you got it all, guess what? You still got problems being human. And if we got children that are raising children that don't know how to raise children, then we got a problem. We need to engage with them and their children, but their children need to become the teachers. There needs to be a switch. Because that's why back in the day, the kids all had something to do. It's called a chore. You know, they had to do something around the situation, their living situation, to get through the day so everyone else could get through the day. if everybody done a little bit of something, it wasn't a lot on one. But also, that's how they had large families, because everyone wound up working. You know, my dad, he had to go to work. He went out of school in the first grade. But he was a creator. And he had a lot of the common sense. And he got through life. And to see him change, never thought I could see that man change. But I saw him change. And he changed when he came back into my life as I was an adult. And he seen what I was doing, how I was getting through. And he realized that there's a lot of me in him. But we weren't together. But the only difference was is I got more education than he got. And all I try to do is share it. I want our children to realize that, man, they can breeze through school and not struggle at all. Don't be scared of the numbers. Those numbers are real. They're factual. They'll never change. And you will need them. So those are the most important things I can put out to a child, is you need to know your numbers. And there everybody's like, oh, they're so confusing. But the funny part about algebra is I had my son come to me, and I told him, I said, do you know the answer's already on the page? He's like, what do you mean? I said, you see that? It tells you what that graph means, what the up is, what the sideways is. And all you got to do is figure out what each of them lines are. What's the distance? What's the measurement? There's a number. That number's not going to change. All you got to do is do the multiple of 300. Doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter. I said, it's the same number. You just have to put it in its place where it goes. I said, that's already there, and you're scared of it. I said, you didn't realize that the answer is right in front of you. All you got to do now is do the other parts that you already know. So, you know, people don't need to be scared of gauges. They just need to pay attention. But, LA,
you are correct. Yeah, I'm here. Answer is often right in front of us in plain sight. We just have to recondition our mind to see it. Awesome Alice, her call dropped. So I think she tried to get back in and the call dropped again. So what we're going to do is, Chris, we're going to wrap it up for today, because we're only a few seconds away from the 2-hour mark anyway. But we'll be back tomorrow, and I'll see if I can get Alice back for tomorrow so we can, it's a month halfway over. And I haven't heard from Reba.
Well, we are
going to
do a clubhouse.
What time? In what room?
Right here after this. It's after this. I'm going to open up a room on Hope Clubhouse, and she's going to bring some people in.
All right. I'll pop in. I'll pop in.
Okay.
Oh, now for people that are listening, that tell them how people if they're not on Clubhouse, somehow they can get on Clubhouse.
Well,
particularly your room.
It's nice if you're nominated. So if you text me, I'll nominate you. That way, when you come on, it already gives you a little bit of something because you're not unknown.
Right.
And,
right.
But you can get the app from the App Store or from your Play Store and get it. Come on to Clubhouse if you don't have it. It is a social network, and it gives people a voice that they never had one. But actually, you know, if you can speak on a platform, you can speak with a bunch of people, and you don't have to look at them, but you can learn from them. And it's a great platform, and it does give a lot of opportunity
right.
for whatever you can be doing.
That's true. All right. Well, with that, on that note, like I said, text Chris Collins to get a direct invite on to, because that's typically how people get on a Clubhouse anyway. And then I'll be popping in a few minutes. Okay. On that note, I got to find my way back to the studio here. All right. On that note, I got to wait for these phones. You got to wait, you know, go from one page and got to wait for it to repopulate. I'm sort of like multitasking on one phone. Wait a minute. Did Alice pop back up? No. It did. All right. Well, it must be something with, anyway, we'll reach her. Well, anyway, we'll just sell her in the room. We'll be back here tomorrow. What's tomorrow? Wednesday?
Yeah, tomorrow's Wednesday.
Okay. All right. Now have you? I haven't heard from Reba in about 3 days. Any word from her?
I haven't heard anything from her either.
Because that fear is going to be popping up here real soon, and things need to be done before the 3rd. So, all right. Well, I'll reach out to her this afternoon. Okay. Wait a minute. All right, I'm trying to race through my phone here. All right, so anyway, Clubhouse. Chris, what's that room again for those who might have Clubhouse? What's the room that they go to on Clubhouse?
Housing, it's HOPE. It's H period, O period, P period, E period. And then Housing Our People Everywhere.
Okay, all right. We're going to be over there. Well, you're going to open that up now, and I'll be over there in a few minutes.